Hey, Hawkeye fans, Chad Lystico of the Des Moines Register, along with Kennington Smith of the Des Moines Register. Kennington, you made it to Carver last night. Hopefully, I didn't obviously quite get there yet, but first of all, how was the crowd? How were the roads? Iowa wins 92-75, and that's seven straight now at Carver. Hawkeyes just are a different team at home. Clearly.
Yeah. As far as the drive, it wasn't bad. I think as many Iowans or Midwesterners know, once you get to the main roads, it's really not that dramatic unless snow is actually coming down. So it was a little bit of a struggle getting to the main road from my complex. Once I got into the highway, it was fine. And then the street roads leading up to the arena still had snow on them, but there were no cars out there. So I was able to go like 20 miles an hour. So it was all good. Like I said, I only swerved once. So I was able to kind of like, I don't know if I was calm and collected. I was like this, like trying to get it back right, but I didn't hit anything. So made it there safely and made it back safely, obviously, which was nice. And crowd was okay. I mean, it wasn't a lot of people. I'm sure, you know, as you would expect, maybe I'm not really too good at estimating. I don't know. When I was on KXNO, the over-under was 6,500. I took the over. It was probably like around that range maybe. They were treated to a good game, though. I mean, Iowa came out shooting the ball really well. They went through a lull. And then that last 2 minutes of the first half on, I mean, they seized control of the game and, you know, pretty much dominated throughout the rest of the way. So if you look at the lead time, I'm pretty sure Iowa led for all of, you know, 36, 37 minutes of that game. So it's exactly what you wanted to see, them kind of pounce on a struggling team, get the win that they needed to set up a really big win against set up a really big game against Northwestern on Sunday.
Yeah, you can check out Kennington's article, hawkcentral.com. If you're not a subscriber, we are running a special, President's Day special this month. Goes through the end of the month. So if you run into a paywall, just click around and sign up. Good update for me. It's been 2 weeks since my right ankle surgery. Obviously, my right fibula is also broken, but it's healing. That's been 3 weeks now since the dramatic fall. But I was happy to report Kennington today. It was the first day that I have been able to do two things, which is walk up the stairs with a boot on. Slowly, and I was able to stand in the shower successfully for the first time. So, and like actually function. So, so that's a huge step. And so I'm hoping to see you very soon. Next week, I think at the latest is the plan. So, with that, thank you for everything you've been doing. I know you're heading to Evanston on Sunday. I wish I could be there. We'll talk about that matchup a little later, but first let's talk about Connor McCaffrey. Subscriber piece I posted this morning. Really awesome feedback so far. And honestly, could not have been timed much better given the game that he had last night. 7 points, 6 rebounds, 13 assists, no turnovers in that game. And it was a clinic. It was a clinic of backdoor cuts, finding the open man. Let's talk about his game last night, first of all, Kennington. And I guess I'm glad that folks are appreciating what he has done. And I think it's just been gradual over time that people have understood his impact. You were not here when fans groaned and when he lined up a three because they knew it wasn't going in. He was in the 20s in shooting percentage in some of his early years. But, you know, he's almost at 37% from three and doing all the other stuff too.
Yeah, I mean, there was a little bit of that last year, I think, in terms of fans not wanting him to take threes. And then obviously February rolled around, he started to shoot the ball really well. But even when he decided to come back for his sixth year, I don't think it was an overwhelming 100% approval from the fans having him back. But obviously the impact that he's had this year, you wonder where Iowa's team would be had he decided not to come back for a sixth year. And it was on display in a multitude of ways last night. Obviously, the 13 assists, no turnovers is what is going to grab the most attention because he was the maestro of the offense last night. And there have been a lot of games where Iowa hasn't really been buttoned up offensively in the half court to start games. And you hear Fran, McCaffrey, and players say, oh, our motion wasn't in sync. It wasn't what we wanted to do coming out of the gate execution-wise. But last night was like, that's what Iowa's half-court motion offense looks like when everything is working in unison, like you said. Obviously, the cutting was really strong by the players on the court. They were able to convert defensive rebounds into getting out in transition, and they were actually scoring in transition, which is something that they didn't do against Ohio State the last time, even though the opportunities were there. Then obviously people had to make shots. So all of those things were working in unison last night. But honestly, I mean, I look at what Connor did defensively as what set the tone for the game, because Bryce Sensabaugh really took it to Iowa in their last meeting, 27 points. And Connor took that assignment and forced a few early turnovers, disrupted his game, really kind of took him out of a rhythm pretty early. And that affected Ohio State's offense. And he continued to play on multiple players and play pretty well. So it was a two-way game for Connor. You got a chance to see a little bit of everything he brings to the table. But I thought defensively was really where he set the tone early. And that was a big talking point for Iowa's team, was to come out and play better defensively. And I thought they did that last night.
Iowa 17-9 overall, 9-6 in the Big Ten, third place. But getting back to the Connor piece, I talked to it was a 6-source story. It was about 2,500 words, which is pretty long for us. My plan going into the article was to, and I had the idea a couple of weeks ago when I knew I was going to be laid up after surgery, to just kind of, make some calls and try to find, dig into that topic. I always try to do like a senior day thing. Like I did Bohannon, a year ago. I've done Utah, White, Jock, a lot of guys, toward the senior day thing. And so this year I picked Connor, and it was probably my favorite senior day story. I've enjoyed doing a lot of these because, Aaron White, the first one I did, that brings back memories. But this one was interesting because you're trying to learn Kennington about more stuff that he does, and you, the more you talk to people, the more you learn. Let me pull an example or two out of my article for those that haven't read it. You think about, let's talk about Peyton Sanford, 0-for-19 shooting slump. A guy that's something that Connor recognized, and others too, but maybe he's filling him up in practice during live play. So he's getting a bunch of looks at three to kind of, keep firing. And then, Austin Ash, who I talked to, said, hey, fans see a guy slumping, then all of a sudden he hits 5 threes in a game and you wonder, wow, that's cool. He broke out of his slump, but you didn't see that Connor was working with him behind the scenes to build up his confidence. Another good example just from this year, Connor being a coach on the floor, talking to coaches ahead of the Illinois game, one game before that, talking about, hey, let's run some early stuff for Tony Perkins. He hasn't been as good lately. Usually when he gets engaged early, he's good. 32 points the next game against Illinois, and that was – they needed every one of those points. And then you saw Perkins again last night, right? His confidence is up now. So there's a couple little examples of how he's just helped this team behind the scenes. He's a coach on the floor. Some stuff that's not in the article, that people mentioned is just sort of little gamesmanship type things like, if you got a big lead down the stretch, a comfortable lead, maybe like 7-9 points, they make a shot, with 2.5 to go, just letting the ball slowly dribble out of bounds and just kind of letting the clock go. Just savvy stuff like that where you're burning, maybe 40 seconds off the shot clock because you stalled for like 9 to get it in even while the clock's running. So, he understands matchups. He understands where Iowa's weaknesses might be and where Iowa might be vulnerable, where the opponent's weaknesses might be. He knows free throw percentages of the opponents, who to foul. Fran McCaffrey basically agreed with my assessment that it's like he's putting himself in the game. So long-winded answer there, but just some little stuff from that story I wanted to kind of share to, appreciate Connor's impact. And then I do want to talk about, don't let me forget to talk about the win totals of his career too, because I think that is his ultimate legacy.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, all of these things just sound like leadership intangibles. When you say things that cannot be quantified in statistics, and you know, you could look at his career stats. I think you put in the article something like, you know, 4.5 points and 2 points, something rebounds, 3 points, something assists, and you know, blind resume. If you just look at stats, you would say, okay, this is not this impactful player that they're just trying to describe. But you just have to watch the games. I mean, you have to follow this team. And honestly, you just have to know ball to really comprehend what he brings to the court. And these type of examples, again, goes back to my previous question of who would be, if anybody would fill that void on Iowa's team had he not been on the team this year. And that's not to say that Iowa doesn't have other leaders, but ones that would put themselves in that position to make sure that Peyton is getting those looks in practice. Like Chris Murray is a leader on the team, but that, you know, that's not his role in practice to make sure that Peyton gets all of those opportunities. He has his own responsibilities. So it's just kind of stuff like that where you have somebody who is older, obviously a very good player, but somebody who is self-aware enough to put himself in a position to make sure that everyone else around him is feeling confident and having success. And then as a result, the entire team lifts because of that. So it takes a special type of person to do that. And I've asked Fran about that before. You have somebody, you know, just kind of going through Connor's entire trajectory, 4-star player out of high school, comes into Iowa, eventually becomes a multi-year starter, and now he is a bench contributor. You know, that might be difficult for some people to process, being a highly rated recruit, being a starter on a team that's been good, and then now they're in a bench role because other players younger than them are starting to ascend and they need those starter minutes, and that might be better for the team. But Connor's accepted his role. He's thrived in it. And he's a huge reason why Iowa, once again, is in a very good position to contend for a Big Ten title going into the early weeks of March.
A couple little items that I've gotten in feedback already from the article that piqued my conversational interest here. Someone was saying they were having a conversation with their buddies and like trying to come up with an 8-man rotation of the Fran era. Like what 8-man rotation would you want to have? You always think about like, oh, the best five, but 8-man rotation. And certainly you wouldn't say Connor McCaffrey is necessarily one of the 8 best players of the Fran McCaffrey era, but this person, and I totally agree now thinking about it, said you would want Connor in that 8-man rotation because he can play all 5 spots because of his distribution, because of his selflessness, ability to fill others up. So I thought that was an interesting point. And it also circles back to another point that someone brought, which I liked a lot. There was a narrative, Kennington, before you got here, that Iowa's teams were soft at the end of the season. And, you know, a lot of times they would start pretty good and then kind of fade toward the end. Well, since Connor's been here, this team has been tough, has exhibited a toughness and a grit and a perseverance. And I think that also is something we have seen play out because Connor's feisty. He's strong-willed. He will have anyone's back. Those were some of the quotes. I didn't really get into the story, which I wish I could have. He brings that toughness, I think, too, to this team. And it's telling, ultimately, it looks like, I mean, unless Iowa collapses here, and we don't think they will, this is going to be 5 straight NCAA tournament teams for the Hawkeyes. Now, of course, 2020 does not count because there never was a tournament. However, that team was going to be about a 5 seed in the NCAA. So you think about Connor's 5-year playing career, because the first year he was out with mono and other stuff. You know, he's going to be with 5 NCAA tournament caliber teams, which is impressive to begin with. And he's 2 wins shy of tying Jordan Bohannon for the most wins accrued in games he played with 109. So he's going to set that record as well.
Yeah, and, you know, those consecutive tournament appearances, that is nothing to roll your eyes and scoff at. I understand that fans will say, oh, I was never made it to the Sweet 16 under Fran. They have to make those deep tournament runs. And I hear all of that. And those are valid criticisms. But to have a team that's winning at this clip at the Power Five level is very impressive, especially because Iowa is not a team that's going to vie for a lot of the, you know, top highly rated, touted players. I mean, it's a lot of ways a developmental basketball program. So to see them continue to win at this clip, and Connor's been at the center of all of that, is really impressive. And I mean, this is a team that it's maybe it's easy to look at this team and what the way they're playing now and talk about the NCAA tournament. But a month ago, maybe even a little bit before then, in early January, their season was very much on the rocks. I mean, they started 0-3 in the Big Ten. That was following the Eastern Illinois loss, and there was definitely potential for their season to bottom out. So they've won 9 of 12 since then. The team is rolling right now, and I know it's a different team than last year's, obviously, but it very much feels very similar to how they've come together, and they're finding their stride in February going into the conference tournament in mid-March.
One of the great first topic, it was a long first topic on Connor McCaffrey. Our second topic today out of three is going to be about Fran McCaffrey's rotation. And that gets into one question that one of our viewers here on YouTube, of the Hawk Central YouTube show here, asked, is why isn't DeSante Bowen playing more? And let's get into that now, because Kennington, I would say Fran has pretty much slimmed this to a seven-man rotation. I mean, Josh Dix is getting a handful of minutes, but it's really seven guys now. It's the starting five, and then it's Peyton Sanford and Patrick McCaffrey. And I was skeptical at first that you could bring Peyton and Patrick off the bench because they're similar players, but the dynamic is working right now. And the way they're playing, I do not see a need to go past seven. And it's just a matter of Fran wants his best guys out there right now for the stretch run. And I don't think it's a criticism of DeSante. It's Ulis is playing well. Perkins is playing well. Connor can run the point. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of rolling with the guys that he knows what he's going to get out of those seven players. And like you said, Josh Dix is getting a few minutes, but I think, again, and I've kind of, you know, said this before on past shows, Josh Dix has an established floor that DeSante does not have right now. There's a steadiness that Josh brings to the court where even if he's not scoring or assisting at the high clips like the Michigan game, for example, he's not going to turn the ball over usually. There have been moments where DeSante's played where he will play good minutes, but there are also several instances where he'll come out and he'll look a little overwhelmed for a few minutes. And that's not an indictment on him, obviously. I mean, he's a freshman in the Big Ten. It's obviously a very tough conference. So he just has to continue to develop. It doesn't look like Fran is losing any type of confidence in him. And he actually said last night that he wishes that he could give DeSante more minutes. So it's not like he's in, the doghouse by any means, but it's a tight rotation right now. Iowa is in a very contested battle for a double bye in the Big Ten. And the margin of error for them is so slim. And in order for them to get to that point where they have that double bye, Fran's going to have to roll with the guys that he trusts and the ones who have been in those moments. And right now, that is that top seven. All of those players were key pieces to last year's championship team, all upperclassmen except for Peyton Sanford. But he played 30-plus games last year and played in some really big moments as well. So he can be considered a veteran in this instance. And another thing to consider is when you think about DeSante, to your point about who's playing well and who can run point, there have been very few games, if any, where Iowa's backcourt has been in foul trouble. Usually it's been, Phil, Chris, the ones getting two fouls. Aaron and Tony, I don't have it off the top of my head. I don't know how many games where both of them even have gotten two fouls in a game. So there's really not a need for DeSante to come in and run point or Josh Dix. So for all of those reasons, he's not in the playing rotation right now. But, fans should still be excited about DeSante and what his future could bring. And there's obviously going to be more opportunities for him to play going into next year.
Yeah, and you look at the seven guys, the seven-man rotation, like I mentioned last night. I mean, Josh played 4 minutes. DeSante played less than one. Philip Rabracha had the lowest number of those seven guys, which just shows you with 16 minutes, 49 seconds of playing time, which just shows you that Fran is willing to adjust which five guys are out there. Obviously, Phillip had a little bit of foul trouble in the first half, but still, he didn't play much in the second. And Fran was content to kind of roll with, kind of more of those longer wings. You know, Patrick got more run in the second half. Obviously, Connor was out there a ton. And, Chris Murray plays 38 and a half minutes, and you're wondering, oh, man, are they going to wear down the stretch? I watched your video with Connor and from last night, and, these guys are in really good shape. It doesn't seem to me that they are experiencing any tired legs. To me, I'm not concerned about that fatigue factor right now. Curious, since you've been in person more, Kennington, any worries about them wearing down through this grind, anything like that you've noticed or heard?
Yeah, not really. I don't think there's really any concern about that. I think that they've done a really good job of conditioning themselves, obviously, in the offseason leading up to the season. But they're pretty used to the ones that are in the rotation are pretty used to playing a heavy load of minutes just because they've gone through a lot in terms of injuries and attrition already this year. You think about first Tony Perkins gets hurt, then Chris Murray gets hurt, then Connor misses the Eastern Illinois game, then Patrick steps away from the team. They've had a lot of guys in and out of the lineup, and it's forced those guys in the rotation to step up and play big minutes throughout the season. So it's not like this is a new trend of these guys playing big minutes. So it's something that they're used to. It's obviously something that is working well for the team, and it's something that the players embrace also. I mean, obviously, there are moments where, Phil or Chris might, throw in a little joke in there about playing, 40 minutes in the post, but nobody's asking to come out of the game. So I wouldn't expect this to affect the team in any way. It's just something that's different. Last year, Iowa was playing 10 scholarship guys every night. This year, the lineup is a little bit shorter. So there might be naturally some questions about, the team wearing down, but they look like a pretty dialed in team. And again, I think also the fact that their top rotation guys are veterans and guys who have been through it, they understand what it takes to take care of their body through a season. So I'm pretty sure they're doing everything behind the scenes to make sure that they're well taken care of and they're preparing themselves because they understand what's going to be required of them minutes wise down the stretch to get to where they're hoping to go.
Yeah. Peyton Sanford, the youngest guy of the seven. And he's, as we mentioned, essentially a 60 game veteran at this point. In the program, and Tony, Aaron, third year guys, Philip Rabracha, 25 years old, Connor going to be 25 this summer. Chris, obviously, the elite star, and Patrick in his fourth year. So very, very veteran group. And that's why we like them. And let's go to our third topic now, Kennington, as you brought it up, let's look at this finishing stretch, five games to go, three of them on the road. All three of those are going to be very difficult starting Sunday at Northwestern. Then it's next Wednesday at Wisconsin, home next Saturday against Michigan State at Indiana, which is going to be unbelievable. Glad you're going to get to see Assembly Hall for the first time. And then finally to finish home against Nebraska. So three of the next four, Kennington, on the road. As we mentioned, they are in third place right now, one game behind the Northwestern Wildcats, who continue to roll. They've beaten Ohio State, Purdue, and Indiana. Back to back. And now they host Iowa, but their schedule is crazy hard down the stretch. After Iowa, they're at Illinois, at Maryland, home against Penn State, at Rutgers. Iowa, if Iowa could win this game, there's a really good case to be made that they are in the driver's seat for second place in the league. Now, Maryland's schedule does ease up a bit down the stretch. So maybe Iowa ends up third, something like that. If they can, finish 4-2, something, if they win this week, you'd like their chances to finish 4-2. And that would definitely get the double bye at this point because of the other results. So exciting opportunity Sunday in Evanston against a team that is on fire, but that Iowa has beaten before.
Yeah. And Connor talked about that after the game. Like you said, you watched the video, and he said that Northwestern is an interesting team because preseason, maybe midseason, you look at their schedule and you look at how well they had been playing and you look at their last stretch that you mentioned and you think to yourself, oh, they're going to fall off, or, oh, they're not going to be able to sustain that success. But then they reel off back-to-back wins against Purdue and Indiana with Iowa coming in. And that's going to be I don't know how many people fit into that arena, but it's going to be packed to the brim, I feel like. And it's going to be Northwestern, a hostile atmosphere in basketball. I don't know the last time that that's been the case, but that's what I was walking into. And it's going to be an interesting game. It's going to be a tough game, obviously, for Iowa. This is a program that's dominated Northwestern over the last several years. And you got to think that Northwestern is playing. Their confidence level is at an all-time high right now. I mean, they beat Purdue. And then that game against Indiana was one where they were up and then Indiana stormed back and the Northwestern was able to hold it together and make a game-winning shot at the end. So I was going to have to come out pretty much the way they came out against Ohio State, executing on both sides and not allowing Northwestern kind of get on our early run and see some momentum. So they were able to roll with the punches against Minnesota. This is going to be a tougher challenge in Northwestern, but that's what I'm going to be looking for is can this team come out with composure on the road in a big game and execute a full game plan? And really going to be looking at Iowa's backcourt in that matchup against Bubui and see what, Aaron Ulis and Tony Perkins are going to be able to do in that game. When they're playing at a high level and when they're playing with aggressiveness, it just adds another gear to this team. Saw it again last night against Ohio State. Saw it against Illinois when Tony had his career high in points. So when they're clicking and Iowa's offense is humming, they're a really tough team to beat. So those are going to be a few things that I'm looking for on Sunday night.
Yeah, looking back at the box score from the January 31st game, the rescheduled game, Chris Street Knight revisited. When the Hawkeyes won 86-70, the big difference, Kennington, was to me Peyton Sanford. Finishes with 20 points, including that 6-point play. Iowa goes 10-for-21 from three as a result. Meanwhile, Northwestern goes 4-for-17 from three. So, just gonna have to hit your shots because Northwestern's a good defensive team, but Iowa is gonna put them up. Iowa's gonna put them up. Peyton's gonna shoot. We know that. The ESPN2 guys last night were having fun with just him launching. And I'm every time he shoots, I feel like I'm fine with the shot. I'm fine with Peyton shooting. And it's almost humorous that when he finds himself, he feels like he's open. He just guns it.
Yeah. It's kind of like when you think about like Chris or even Keegan last year, I'm sure Luka was the same way. Maybe in Joe Wieskamp as a shooter, like, shots that are like bad shots for most players are not bad shots for them just because they have the ability to make them at a high level. So Peyton, again, is obviously somebody who's going to have a big game against Northwestern. I thought that he was a stabilizer last night against Ohio State. I know he only had 10 points, but they were all felt like crucial baskets, especially in that first half when Iowa was kind of in a rut. And he was a part of that 12-0 run at the end of half that seized control of the game. So really, really interesting matchup on Sunday. Another thing that we haven't gotten to that I thought was notable was Patrick McCaffrey playing 21, if you look at like the minutes seconds last night, which is about the highest minutes total that he's played since his return. So he's continuing to ramp back up. And France said last night that it was really important for him to play as many minutes as he could because he in France where still has to get his legs under him. So still an adjustment for Patrick, but he can, these last five games continue to improve his conditioning and you feel like he's close to himself going into the Big Ten tournament, that is going to be something that can add another element that can lift up Iowa's team as well. So there is still a lot of room for this team to grow and improve at this later point in the year, which I think should be exciting if you're an Iowa fan.
Phil Parker's paw asks, thoughts on a 22-11 record getting Iowa 6th seed for the NCAA tournament? 4-1 to end the season and 1-1 in the Big Ten tournament. Certainly 4-1 to end this season to me I'm not a bracketology 100% expert, but right now Iowa's already kind of in that 6-7 mix. If they go 4-1, say finish second place in the Big Ten conference, with what would that put them? I guess 13-7 after an 0-3 start. Mm-hmm. And especially if the committee kind of looks at the losses. I mean, you lose four or lose a couple games without Chris Murray in there. You know, the Eastern Illinois loss again. There's no way Iowa loses that game if Connor McCaffrey plays, in my opinion. That was the one game he missed with the wrist injury. You know, nobody out there to calm Iowa down. So I think all those factors, yes, I think absolutely. I'm looking at it now. I think they're right on the cusp of a six. So they are solidly in the tournament, and that's what you want at this point in the season. Good question. I like Iowa's chances Sunday, Kennington. I do. I think they're going to get one of these next two road games. Northwestern has just been living right. They're playing well. They deserve it, everything they're getting, but they're living right now, and I feel like Iowa, I think a little pressure is building on Northwestern. You know, a little bit more attention. With that becomes pressure, and Iowa just has had their number. You mentioned it. I'll leave you with the final thought here, but nine straight against the Cats. So I like their chances, and if they don't get that, I think they get one of these next two, Northwestern, Wisconsin.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, Iowa is a team that's also playing with some confidence right now. I think there is something to the learning how to handle the success of winning. And Iowa is a team that's, you know, been there before in terms of they know what it's like to compete down the stretch of a Big Ten slate, vying for positioning, vying for NCAA tournament seeding. And I think that the team understands and recognizes the opportunity that's ahead of them. And I don't think it is overblown the way that this team has matured over the season and being able to kind of handle the ebbs and flows, especially things that happen on the road. So I would agree with you. I think they're going to, you know, probably split these next two and put themselves in position to be playing for a lot down the stretch. So, again, three road games in these last five, all of them are really big. And like you said, Iowa seems invincible at home. Hasn't quite been the case away from Carver. So can this team adopt that kind of road warrior mentality and do what they need to do on the road to finish out the season strong and carry momentum into March?
Thank you, Kennington Smith. As you were talking, I saw that Caitlin Clark and Connor McCaffrey liked my tweet about the Connor story. So good vibes flowing in Iowa City. People got time to read stuff. Check that out if you haven't already at hawkcentral.com. Really enjoyed the piece. Thanks to Luca Garza, Austin Ash, Robbie Hummel, Sherman Dillard. A lot of sources went into this story. And great. Keep up the great work, Kennington. I know you've got a cool story brewing as well. Do you want to share anything about that, or you want to keep it under wraps for now?
I'll share a little bit, yes. Going to be centered on Chris Murray. There is an element of his development this year that I feel like hasn't been talked about in this way. So I started the groundwork on that yesterday, and I'm excited for it to come to fruition. So just stay tuned.
Stay tuned, 5:30 Sunday. After you watch the Daytona 500, of course, make sure to tune into that. I definitely will be from home and then on to the Iowa Northwestern matchup on Sunday. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Kennington. For Kennington, this is Chad Lystico of the Des Moines Register saying so long, and we will talk to you next week.